If you'd like to, if you'd like to follow along in actual Bible, 1 Corinthians 15, we're going to start there and then go back to a story in Samuel. I've got something special for us tonight. As always, it's an honor to be here with my friends, Rob and Christy Buckingham. It's just it's awesome. I love your pastor. There's very few people in the world that I can sit down and talk with for 2 or 3 hours and it doesn't get boring. Him and Christy are amazing. They're people that they're one of the few pastors that I could sit there and talk about everything from an Irish philosopher's take on God to a Franciscan monk to Pentecostal thought to I love the well-roundedness of it. Just brilliant. And I've just sort of, whether you like it or not, I've sort of made you my Melbourne home, and there you go. And rock, right? So if this is your first time seeing us here, this is all I do for a living. I travel around and speak. I've had the incredible privilege of being mentored by a pastor who just happens to have his rabbi training as well. So my stuff comes from that. Also, I have a master's degree in clinical psychology, so I'm actually qualified to sort your head out. So careful what you say to me, because I can see through all that stuff, right? Now, on your way out, you're going to see that we took over half of your cafe there, right, with our resources. If you're going to your car and you cannot find my resource table, seek medical help, okay? It's taking up half the room. And if you look at that and you wonder, why would you carry all that stuff around with you? Here's the reason. Ready? We make a lot of money from it. All right? And the reason we do that is because we live with the conviction that we are not called simply to go to heaven when we die, although we embrace that, but we're called to say yes to the infinite possibilities that Jesus has for us to partner with him to fix this world. And so we are called to bring heaven to earth. Every place we see hell, we are called to partner with Jesus to bring heaven to that. And so 100% of whatever we make out there, we use to do justice in the world. We have orphanages that take care of mentally handicapped children. We have rescue homes in Cape Town to get girls out of sex trafficking. Occasionally, we have to use that money to go into countries and minister where they can't afford to bring us in, because we don't want to say no because they can't afford it, right? So in one of the most affluent nations on the earth, we bear the responsibility of confronting oppression everywhere we see it, right? Which is why I find myself so simpatico with your leadership here, because if someone was to ask me at Southland Mall, if someone was to say, I'm thinking about going there, what are they all about? I would say, if I could summarize it in one sentence, I would say this: the folks at Bayside endeavor to authentically and intentionally affect their world and make people's lives better. The action is not here. The action is out there. And so I love that. So on your way out, you could pick those things up. Everything's available in 4 formats: CD, DVD, USB, and direct download. Okay. Since the last time I was here, I think we've put out 3 brand new ones. So I'm always putting out new stuff because I can't stand the thought that I would never have anything new to say. I think that would be boring. So you could go out there and check those things out. All right. So I want to talk to you tonight about resurrection. And I want to talk to you because we're entering the season of resurrection. So I want to talk about one of the implications. Resurrection is one of those things that if I spoke 40 different messages about 40 different meanings, I would never be wrong, right? Because resurrection is wide and broad with meaning. And resurrection surprised everybody, right? No one expected Jesus to die. They thought he was going to take over the Roman Empire. So when Jesus died, that was surprising. What was more surprising is that he rose again, because in my experience and in yours, dead people stay dead, right? And so the Hebrew word for resurrection and the Hebrew word for surprise share the same root word. And that makes sense. Like, if you saw me die, you came to my funeral, and then 3 days later you ran into me at the mall, surprise sort of cuts it, right? And so when Jesus rose from the dead, it led to endless discussions as to what does this mean for our world. And so Paul was writing this letter to the Corinthians, and he's trying to put into words what resurrection means. And he spends 58 verses doing that. Now, 58 verses in Bible language is a saga. It's an epic. It's like, I cannot find all the words, so I'm going to just put everything I can think of in there. And quite frankly, there's some weird stuff in there. Like, he says, so you see, there's no need to baptize dead people anymore, which leads to all kinds of questions. Like, was that ever actually an issue? He says things like, so you see, the mortal must take on the immortal to inherit the imperishable, which is like, what are you talking about? But as all great rabbis do, He summarizes the entire deep thought in one statement at the end. And so I want to focus on that statement because I want to come to you tonight with a massive encouragement. I have a two-point message. One is going to be a massive encouragement. The other is meant to be a massive challenge that only you know the answer to. No one will be able to answer this for you. Only you know. And it won't be a one-time decision. It's something we need to check our heart with all the time. This is 1 Corinthians 15:58. If you guys could bring that slide up for me, here it goes. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourself fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Now, here's my question. Do we actually believe that? Here's Paul's point. Paul's point is because Jesus rose again, here's what that means. That means that this world matters enough to God for him to fix it and not destroy it. Because of resurrection, every kind word, every act of justice, it matters. How you treat the waitress, even when she's taking too long to get your drink, matters. How you treat your husband when he leaves his underwear on the floor for the 18,000th time, matters. How you treat your neighbor when they do something that disappoints you, matters. How you treat the person that cut you off in busy Melbourne traffic, it matters. Why? Because this world matters enough to God for Jesus to fix it and not destroy it. And he called us to partner with that. And what that means is that if you did it for God, it isn't wasted. Paul is insisting that if you did it for God, you will never waste your life. Now, here's my question. What if we believe that? And do we actually believe that? Or is our default button to go, if something doesn't work, that was a waste? And I think we all have that default button. I did something a few weeks back, and I put my heart and soul into it, and it didn't go exactly like I thought. Actually, I was a bit disappointed. And my default button back in the hotel was I think I wasted my time tonight. Hang on a second. Wait a minute. If I did it for God, it's not wasted. I wonder how our life would change if we actually believed that nothing is wasted. If we're doing it for God, and that's my one point of encouragement to you. If you woke up today saying yes to the infinite possibilities Jesus has for your life, if what you gave your hand to works, awesome. If it didn't work so well, still awesome, because nothing is wasted. You did not waste your life. If they agreed with you, great. If they disagreed with you, also great, because nothing is wasted. If you put on a meeting and you expect 200 people and only 70 show up, don't cheapen the 70 that are there at the expense of 130 that weren't there. Nothing is wasted. If you did it for God, nothing we do is ever in vain, which made me think of a story from the Old Testament. It's actually such an important story. It's told twice in two different books from two different perspectives. It's about a guy named David. Just to catch you up on the story, David is a shepherd who, quite frankly, if you read it without bias, is a violent guy. He has no trouble just beating people up. Bears, no problem. Kills them. Lions, no worries. Big, giant Philistine warriors, I got this. David is like a special forces Jack Bauer, right? He kills Goliath. He becomes incredibly popular. When he was a shepherd, he was asking God to promote him. God promotes him. Then it doesn't go so well. David ends up an enemy of the state. He ends up an enemy of the most powerful guy in the country, the king. And he runs from the king. And when you're running from the king, you're also running from all the king's friends. And what we find out is that everywhere David turns, there's another one of Saul's friends. And what happened right before this is a guy named Achish, the king of Gath, sees him, and David has to pretend to be crazy to save his life. So David gets tired of running, and he ends up in a cave at Adullam. And what we find out is that 400 people knew where he was going and met him there. Which leads to this observation. As awesome as you are at fighting, mate, you suck at hiding, right? Like, when you're hiding with no tracking devices, no electricity, no anything, and 400 people already know where you are, you gotta rethink your strategy there. So David ends up at this cave at Adullam. And here's the story. This is from one of the Samuels. Here it comes. And David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. When his brothers and his father's household heard about it, they went down there too. And watch this. And all those who were in distress or in debt or discontented, how empowering is that, gathered around him and he became their commander. So when 400 in-debt distressed people gather around you and you become their commander, what's that called? That's called pastoring. That's called ministry. It's called volunteering. That is something you didn't sign up for. David wanted to be promoted. God promotes him, and it wasn't what he thought. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever thought you would die without something, and then you actually got it, and it wasn't what you thought? If the entire book of Ecclesiastes can be summed up in one statement. Successful people navigate the tension between depression and melancholy. Depression is wanting something you don't have. Melancholy is getting what you think you want and realizing that didn't do what you thought. And that's what's going on here. David wanted to be promoted with all of his heart, and he got promoted, and he ends up in a cave with people with issues. This is not good. Let's keep going. This is the next verse. Next one. And from there, David went on to Mizpah in Moab and said to the king of Moab, would you let my father and mother come and stay with you until I learn what God will do with me? In other words, I can't have my mom in a cave with 400 people with issues. It's not safe. So he left them with the king of Moab and stayed there as David was in the stronghold. But the prophet Gad said to David, do not stay in the stronghold. Go to the land of Judah. So David went to the forest of Hereth. So let's make sure we're keeping up here. Next slide. Here's the basic thing that's going on. David's being hunted. He's surrounded by people with issues, and now his family is there to complicate things. And the enemy has his hometown under assault. Quick geography lesson. David is in a cave in Adullam, which is up on a mountain. Think Afghanistan, that kind of terrain. Made it very hard to attack. This is why the whole world's tried to, at some point, to take over Afghanistan, and no one's ever able to do it, right? Alexander the Great took over the whole world, got to Afghanistan, went, nope, we're going around, right? Genghis Khan, same way. Russia couldn't. Now, I don't know what America's doing. Anyway, it makes it very hard geographically because you're up high and they're down low. Now, the cave of Adullam's up here. It goes down into a valley called Rephaim. And then over here is Bethlehem. That's where David's from. Now, here's what happened. The Philistines heard that the guy that killed their warrior is from Bethlehem. So instead of taking on the entirety of Israel, they went and surrounded the hometown of Bethlehem thinking, if we hurt people in there, at some point we'll get to somebody that he actually cares about. So David's stuck in this cave, and the Philistines have his entire hometown surrounded. This is not good. Now, this gets told from another perspective in another book. This is the 2 Samuel version. Here we go, next slide. During harvest time, 3 of the 30 chief warriors came down to David at the cave of Adullam. And while a band of Philistines was encamped in the valley of Rephaim, at that time David was in the stronghold and the Philistine garrison was at Bethlehem. And David longed for water and said, oh, that someone would get me a drink of water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem. Now let's stop and talk about this for a second. Is David being literal? No, he's longing for his former life. He's from Bethlehem. He's like, you know what? Life wasn't so bad when I was a shepherd. When I was a shepherd, I was dissatisfied, and I wanted God to promote me. Then God promotes me, and I'm in a cave with 400 people with issues. This is not good. I want to go back there. Listen, if you're growing as a person, there will be times where you will long for simpler times. You start the business, it's just getting going. You're like, God, give us increase. God, grow our business. God, grow our business. God, grow our business. And now you got 3 locations and 30 employees, and you got more pressure and problems than you ever imagined. And there's a day you get there to your office and you go, oh, I just want to drink water from that old well again. You start a church and you're like, God, bring us people, north, east, south, and west. Bring us people. Come on, Lord. Bring them in. And now the thing is huge across multiple campuses and multiple services. And at times you sit back and go, I'm surrounded by people with issues. Oh, I just want to drink a different glass of water. Oh, if you're growing as a person at all. There are times you'll long for simpler times. We'll talk about that in a second. David's being euphemistic, but three of these guys take him serious. I picture, have you ever seen National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, right? Remember the crazy cousin Eddie, right? And Clark loses the plot, and he's like, what I wouldn't give for my good-for-nothing boss to be kidnapped from his mansion, brought here in his pajamas, wrapped in a red bow. And Randy's like, you serious, Clark? And he goes and does it. He kidnaps the guy and brings him there. Like, that's what happens here. Three of these guys take him serious and literal, and they go get him water from Bethlehem through enemy lines. Now watch what happens. Next slide. So three of the mighty warriors broke through the Philistine lines, drew water from the well near the gate of Bethlehem, and carried it back to David. But he refused to drink it. 24 miles, round trip, to get him a water. And David's response is, well, that didn't work out how you thought. You just risked your life to give him water. And he pours it out. And that's where the rubber meets the road for anybody living for God. It's one thing to celebrate when everybody's drinking what you're giving them. But when you give your life to hand somebody something and they pour it out, that's when our faith gets tested. Did we waste our life or did we not? Watch what happens here. He says, he refused to drink it. And instead, he poured it out before the Lord. And he said, far be it from me, Lord, to do this. Is it not the blood of the men who went at the risk of their lives? And David would not drink it. Now, let me dig into this a little bit, and we'll see where we find ourselves in this. Next slide. So here's Adullam. Next, you already put it up there once. Here it comes. Here's Adullam. That's a party, isn't it? Hey, baby, Vegas or Adullam? Adullam it is, right? David's stuck up there with 400 people with issues. Now, let me talk through the story to make sure we're there, and then I want to get into the application. Next slide. So this will be like talking points. Adullam was a fortified city to protect Judah and refugees in times of danger. It was a series of caves and tunnels made it very hard to attack. David is there as a refugee from a very, very jealous, powerful man. Adullam is 2 miles from where David defeated Goliath. So from that elevation, he could have seen where it all started. He would have been thinking, if I'd have just minded my own business, seriously, that's where it all started. Keep going. Next slide. David is surrounded by marginalized, discontented, indebted people. That's not very energizing. David grew up in Bethlehem. Bethlehem is 12 miles from Adullam. That's 20 kilometers. David seems to be using a figure of speech longing for simpler days. Next slide. So three of these guys take him serious. They walk 12 miles, 20 Ks, mostly behind enemy lines to get him water. That's walking from here to the center of Melbourne with soldiers standing in your way. After walking 40 kilometers through enemy lines, David refuses to drink it and pours it out. And this is where I wanted to get. David turns their act of duty into an act of worship. Now, let's talk about that for a second. Here's the challenge. The encouragement is if you're doing what you're doing for God, nothing is ever wasted. But here's the challenge. Are you doing what you're doing out of duty? Or do you see what you're doing as a living sacrifice before God? Because if you're doing what you're doing out of duty, they had better drink what you give them or it is wasted. But when you see your life as a living sacrifice and you're offering the gift on your life back to God, then whether they drink it, whether they don't drink it, it doesn't matter because the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. When you put on a meeting and you think 200 are going to show up and 70, you did not waste. If you did that out of duty, you absolutely wasted your time. But if you see your life as a living sacrifice and you're giving your life to the infinite possibilities Jesus has for your life and only 70 show up when you expected 200, it doesn't matter because the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. This is true of anything we do. The people in a church I feel the worst for are the worship people. And I'll tell you why. Because I travel the world, and I've never seen an exception to this. When a service starts, only 25 to 30% of the crowd is there. And by the time the music's over, it's full. Which means that if you're on this stage, you got to look at people showing up late for 20 minutes. And I'm just waiting for one time when a worship person loses their mind and goes, where have you been? We spent 2 hours putting this together for you, and you can't even bother showing up on time. And the person standing at the door, yeah, is here for the worship people. Right? I feel bad for them, right? I'm waiting for a church service where they like, we're going to do the preaching first and surprise everybody. But that's, I can tell you that's not going to happen. All right, but here's the thing. Here's the thing. If you're worship leading out of duty and you see that, the thought would be, why am I wasting my time? Half the people aren't even here. But if you're worship leading because you've offered your musical gift back up as a sacrifice to God, then whether they're here, whether they're not, whether they're engaged, whether they're not, the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. The question is, are you doing it out of duty or do you see it as a sacrifice? I preach for a living. It takes me about 10 hours with 4 people to put together a talk that takes 40 minutes to deliver. And all it takes is one faceless coward plonker who's... Yeah! All it takes is one faceless coward plonker who spent less than 10 seconds thinking about what it took me 10 hours with 4 people to put together to start an internet rumor about something about it. And I could start saying, man, I'm wasting my life preaching. This is ridiculous. That one faceless coward plonker, right? Right? No. If I'm doing it out of duty, then yes, I've wasted my life. But if I'm offering my teaching gift and my voice back up as a sacrifice to God, then whether they drink it, whether they don't drink it, the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. I read your pastor's blogs. I find them incredibly astute, well-researched, incredibly well-articulated. And if you read your pastor's blogs, they always invoke thought and discussion, which is the point. And invariably, there's always some faceless coward plonker who spends their life selling cakes or something, who's never given more than 10 seconds of thought to what Rob has researched and articulated really, really well. And they just go nuts. And now if he's writing those things out of duty, that would be very discouraging. But if he's doing what he's doing because he sees his life as a living sacrifice before God, drink it or don't drink it, but the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. I met a new friend tonight. They pastor in Bali, which I think would be up there in places that'd be very difficult to pastor in. Now, I mean that like as a compliment. Like, I don't feel called there. But here's the thing. If you're pastoring in Bali because, well, it's my duty to serve God, then they better all buy what you're selling. But if you see your life as a living sacrifice to God, then I hope they all drink what you're giving them. But if they drink it, they drink it. If they don't, they don't. But your sacrifice makes your life holy regardless. Regardless. Now, let's dig into what this might mean. Next slide. Some applications. Sometimes you're in the center of God's will in a cave with people with issues. If you turn around and you find yourself in a cave with people with issues, our tendency would be to go, what did I do wrong? Sometimes nothing. Sometimes you're exactly where God wants you to be in a cave with people with issues. Let's say it this way. Sometimes people misunderstand you. You're speaking in metaphor and they take you literally. That can happen too. Let's say it this way. Next slide. There, as you grow, there are times you'll long for simpler times. Remember when it wasn't so complicated? Like, remember that? Remember when our business was sort of easy with 2 of us? Remember that? Remember when we were first married? And we had no money or anything. We ate ramen noodles regularly. But we loved each other. We had a small house and small bills and no pressure. Then something happened. We got convinced to buy a bigger house. And here's what we did. We signed up for 30 years of entirely too much pressure. We're paying every month for rooms we don't walk in so that people we don't care about will think we're more successful than we actually are. And this sounded like a good idea. And then in the middle of that, somebody convinced us to add three more lives to this situation. And let me tell you, they bring nothing to the table. They eat, they crap, they take. No! I just wish we could drink from a different well. That's why healthy marriages, what do healthy marriages do? Healthy marriages regularly have somebody watch the kids and they go off on their own. Why? To drink from the older well. Next slide. Remember when we had no money, so taxes were not an issue? Remember when you didn't dread tax season? Because it didn't matter. You didn't have any money anyway. Remember we had a small house with small bills? Let's say it this way. Next slide. Far be it from me, Lord. David saw this as sacred. David took their act of duty and made it an act of worship. And he does something that was very common. It was called the drink offering. This is something they would have understood. When he pours it out before the Lord, this is something that was very, very common in their world. Let me show you just one scripture about it. Next slide. This is Numbers 28. With a bull, there's to be a drink offering of a half a hin of wine, with a ram, a third of a hin, with each lamb, a quarter hin. This is the monthly burnt offering to be made at each new moon. In other words, on the first day of the month, they would regularly pour out a portion of water and wine to acknowledge that everything comes from God. He saw this as sacred. Maybe the best way to remember this challenge is this. Next slide. The sacrifice makes it sacred. And if the sacrifice makes it sacred, then nothing is wasted. What if I told you that I was at Woolworths today? And coming down the aisle at Woolworths was a lady, let's say, late 50s. And let's say that on her arm was a man in his late 20s who was blind and obviously a little bit mentally handicapped. And she was leading him around slowly and kindly, like, okay, now we're going to come up, we're going to turn right, we're going to, like, what assumptions would you make? You would assume that was probably the mother or a caregiver, but let's say it's the mother, and she's taking care of her own child who has a disability. And what would you think of me if I said, you know what I did? I walked up to that lady and I was like, what's wrong with you, lady? Unless he gets better, you're wasting your entire life. What would that make me? That would make me a jerk, right? Why? Because we know in our heart that whether he gets better or whether he doesn't get better, her sacrifice makes her whole life holy. She is doing this out of love, and that love makes her whole life holy, regardless of result. Or the daughter taking care of her aging parents. Same idea. The idea of, oh, if they don't get better yet, whoa, 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 whoa. If you're doing it out of duty, yeah. But if you see your life as a living sacrifice, then your sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. I know someone personally who was a Sony record contracted singer, okay? Like, when I say she could sing, I don't mean, in my opinion, she can sing. I mean, Sony Records said, you can sing. And her father came down with some early onset degenerative situation. And she left all of that at 27 years old to go take care of him. Why? Because she said, I want to make sure that as long as my dad lives, he has the best quality of life humanly possible, and I'm the one. And what would you say if somebody went, what are you doing? You're wasting the biggest peak years of your singing career to do what? What if he doesn't get better? And the truth is if she's doing it out of duty, then she's wasting her life. But if she sees her life as a living sacrifice, then the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. What about when the business doesn't work? Say, oh, I gave 7 years of my life to that business and it just folded. Look, I hope no one ever goes through that. But listen, if you're a business owner out of duty, it better work. But if you see your business skills as a gift and you're offering it as a living sacrifice, then your sacrifice makes it sacred. My encouragement to you is if you're doing it for God, nothing is wasted. My challenge is, are you brave enough to ask the question, am I doing what I'm doing out of duty, or am I doing what I'm doing out of sacrifice? Am I wifing out of duty or sacrifice? Am I husbanding out of duty or sacrifice? Am I parenting out of duty or sacrifice? Am I a neighbor out of duty or sacrifice? Am I building that business out of duty or sacrifice? Am I a passenger in a car out of duty or sacrifice? Paul encourages all followers of Jesus to see their lives as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable unto God. Later, he says, I have poured my life out as a drink offering. In other words, Paul was chained to a wall, awaiting Roman execution, fixing to die without knowing that anybody ever believed what he said. No, he had no idea that anybody would ever believe what he said. And he still said, I have not wasted my life. And it wasn't because he saw all the results in his lifetime. It's because he knew that he gave his life as a living sacrifice. Let's say it this way. Next slide. I gave 20 years to this relationship and then they walked out. Oh, I just wasted 20 years of my life. Yes. Yes, you did. If you were a wife or a husband out of duty, you absolutely wasted your life. But if you woke up every day saying yes to the infinite possibilities God has for your life, and you were offering your abilities and compassion as a wife or a husband as a living sacrifice to God, then your sacrifice makes it holy and nothing is wasted. Nothing. I gave it all and they didn't respond like I thought. I know. And if you did it out of duty, yes. But if you did it out of sacrifice, your sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. I raised my kids the best I could and they turned out terrible. Yes. Man, I've wasted my life with them. I was talking to a young couple, this is a few weeks back. They just had a freshly baked baby. I'm talking about this baby like this. And it was their first one, you know? And I was like, yeah, good on you. You know, they were excited. I'm excited for them, you know? And they said, you know what we're going to do, Shane? I said, what's that? They said, we're going to raise this kid like Proverbs tells us so it'll turn out great. I was like, good luck with that. Well, there you go. Like, listen, I know people who have four children. Same house, same education, same church, same parents, same values, and three of them are awesome, and one of them's a flipping lunatic. What? And you go, I don't know. Why? There's no guarantees in this world, and if you parent for guarantees, you're going to rob yourself of the joy of parenting them. Listen, are you a parent out of duty? It's my duty to be a parent. Or do you see your parenting as a sacrifice before the Lord, and the sacrifice makes it sacred? Let's say it this way. Next slide. Maybe it's the love that makes it sacred. See, David sees his world sacramentally. The sacrifice makes it holy. It doesn't have to work out perfectly to be holy because the sacrifice makes it that way. How then should we rethink how we measure results and happiness? So what does that mean for us? See, great sermons are not meant to be agreed with or disagreed with. Like if you walk out of here tonight and go, I love that. Why? Because I agree with you. You missed the point. If you walk out of here tonight and go, I hated that. Why? Because I disagreed with you. You also missed the point. Great sermons are meant to be discussed, wrestled with. A sermon can't be evaluated in the amount of time it took to deliver it. It's not a very good sermon. So I want to ask a few questions that if you're brave enough, I want you to at least spend some time later thinking about, maybe over a cup of coffee with a couple of friends. Next slide. Where do we live with the delusion of guarantees or control? Is there any place right now that you think A plus B equals C, if I just do this, this guarantees that this will work out? Is there any place you're setting yourself up for disappointment like that? Are you doing what you're doing out of duty or sacrifice? Only you know that. Only you can tell that. Let's say it this way. Does it have to work out perfectly in order to feel it was profitable? Like, where are our default buttons? Oh, I've just wasted my time when something doesn't work out. Look, it's one thing to be a person of faith when it's all working, but when you give your life to hand someone water and they pour it out, that. Let's say it this way. What do we need to hand over to God as a sacrifice that makes the outcome sacred regardless? What do we need to hand over to God as a sacrifice? Let me say that same thing one different way, and then I want to illustrate it because it's so important. Next slide. All we get is a gift. Have we offered it regardless of outcome? Just give the gift and let God do the rest. Let me illustrate this with a personal story, and I'm not in any way trying to elevate myself. This is a ritual that I do that has helped me. And if it helps me, I hope it can help you. Every Saturday night, so tonight before I go to bed, I do a few things. One, I try to forgive everybody that hurt me this week. Two, I forgive myself for people I have hurt. I try to let it go. I don't want to take this week's failures into next week. Life gets too heavy that way. The second thing I do is I spend 5 minutes or so being thankful to God for only what's in my right now. Like if I'm not allowed to believe God for anything else, like if God didn't do one more thing for me, most of our lives are still great. And I try to make myself aware of that, and that's really helped me with envy or jealousy in my life. But the other thing I do is I take account of the gifts on my life, and I verbally offer them back to God. It's a ritual that I do that's really helped me with this concept. I take the gifts on my life, and I offer them back as a sacrifice. And what this has done is it's done two big things. I get far less hurt when people don't buy what I'm saying. If they pour it out, they pour it out. It's not that I'm not made of steel, but I used to get really, really hurt, and I'm getting less hurt. The other thing it does is that it allows me, and this is huge, this is my litmus test. If I start to get manipulative to control the outcome, I know I've crossed the line from sacrifice to duty. That's for me. So if I need your approval to feel like this was okay, and I feel like I'm not getting it, I might manipulate the conversation so that I can feel okay. And that's a bad, that's a litmus test. It's not bad. It's just, have I crossed from duty, from sacrifice to duty? Because I don't want to do that. I want to stay in sacrifice. This has helped me do this. So if I could illustrate this for you, so in case you're like, what is he talking about? Let me give you an example of what I mean. I'll go through my gifts that God's given me. I didn't ask for them. I don't deserve them. And I'll just thank God for them, and then I'll offer it back to him. So it goes something like this. Lord, thank you for my voice. Boy, I don't know what I'd do without it. If my vocal cords quit on me, I'm literally not good at anything else. Oh, I'd be so stuffed. Thank you for my voice. Lord, I offer this voice back to you as a sacrifice. Lord, thank you for my mind. Thank you that it works differently than others. It's a little unique, you know? Thank you. I offer that. Thanks for my almost photographic memory. I have a great reading memory. I can close my eyes and read a book. I have a horrible auditory memory. I don't know how all that works, but if you tell me your name and you don't have a name tag, gone. But if I read it or see it, I can't forget it, which is a gift, unless you're trying to forget something, right? Like, I accidentally saw my granny naked once. Yep, still there, right? That's bad. Bad. I can't get rid of it. It's photographed. It's in there. So I say, Lord, thanks for my mind, my memory, my voice, my teaching gift. Lord, you gave me these gifts. I didn't ask for them. I don't deserve them, but I offer them back to you as a sacrifice. And all I can tell you is that simple ritual has really helped me deal with rejection better, and it's really helped me be less manipulative when I'm feeling like I'm not being accepted. Because I hope you drink what I brought you tonight. I worked very hard on it, and I really think it would change your life. But if you drink it, you do. And if you don't, you don't. I've offered it to God as a gift, and I'm leaving all the results with him, because the way you respond cannot be my responsibility. Right? Right? And that's true of parenting, running a business, wifing. If you're a wife and you take on the responsibility of your husband's happiness, good luck. If you're a husband and you take on responsibility for your wife's happiness, good luck, right? Because if they're happy, you feel like you're winning. If they're not, you feel like you're a loser. That is not, Paul is insisting, if you're doing it for God, nothing is wasted. Let's say it this way, next slide. Control is an illusion. Go back one, please. Control is an illusion. Guarantees are a deception. Where have deceptions and illusions determined our evaluations of where we are? I think part of resurrection is being set free from that. Let's say it another way, next slide. Where do we try to live in the illusion of controlling the outcome instead of just offering the gift? Just offer the gift, leave everything else to God. If you offered the gift and did your best, leave everything else to God, everything else. Where is God when the child makes the wrong decision, the business fails, or the divorce happens? Does God only get the credit on the good end, or does our sacrifice make it sacred regardless? Maybe the one question we can sort of take with us tonight is this. Next slide. Why this waste? If you're a follower of Jesus and you embrace resurrection, I bless you tonight to know that if you did it out of duty, I'm challenging you to move into sacrifice. But if you see your life as a living sacrifice to God, if they drink it, they drink it. If they don't, they don't. But the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. May you never think you've ever wasted. May the words, "I've wasted my time," never come out of your mouth ever again. The people who are trusting Jesus where you are awesome. But the people you've given your life for, and they haven't trusted, or they've utterly rejected it, you did not waste your life, because you see your life as a living sacrifice. And I want to encourage you with that. Nothing you're doing is wasted. You're flipping inspiration to me. Yeah. For all of you musicians, I don't care if they show up on time or not. You're giving your life, and you've offered your gift as a sacrifice. It is sacred regardless. Now, the rest of you, show up on flipping time, will you? My goodness. To you wives, to you husbands, to you business owners, to you parents, control's an illusion. Guarantees are a deception. Offer the gift and leave the rest with God. My encouragement to you is this. Resurrection is here. Jesus is alive, which means this world matters to God. Everything you're doing matters. And if you're doing it for God, nothing is wasted. My challenge, though, be willing to ask yourself every day, am I doing this out of duty or out of sacrifice? Because if you're doing it out of sacrifice, the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless. I hope you were very blessed by tonight. I loved being with you. I'd like to take a second and authentically invite you back tomorrow morning. I know that's sort of weird to come twice, but I'm doing a totally different message. It's a brand new message. I promise you, it'll be worth it. Listen, if you come tomorrow morning and it doesn't utterly change your life, this is how much I believe in this. I will physically, out of my own pocket, pay you back for whatever they charge you to come. Okay? That's how much I, whatever they charge you to come here, I'll give you the money back. It's totally risk-free. Come on back tomorrow. On your way out tonight, if you'd be so kind to stop by our table, and if you would do so in the first 20 minutes or so, my team is out there, and they drove from Werribee. Now with that in mind, watch your pocketbooks. I have confiscated their knives already, but they are from Werribee, okay? So if you could be kind to them, they're just really, really good. They're my good friends. They save my life on a regular basis in Melbourne. Listen, I hope you really enjoyed tonight. I love you very much. I hope you drank what I gave you, but if you don't, it doesn't matter, because the sacrifice makes it sacred regardless.